Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight we talk about the difficulty of graduating with degrees in education and being prepared to teach in our school systems, but finding it very difficult to get positions, perhaps because of budget cuts and the impact on the availability of teaching positions. My guest this evening has found a way to teach abroad, and he's found a creative satisfaction in teaching kindergarten as well as 6th, 7th, and 8th grades in Macau, China. My guest this evening is Stephen Lawrence, a graduate of the University of California with a master's in teaching and a teacher certification for the state of New Jersey, where he taught for 5 years at different grade levels. He has worked in Macau, China, at an international school for the past 2 years. It is a pleasure to welcome Stephen Lawrence to help us find ways to take charge of our lives and think about teaching abroad. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Stephen Lawrence.
Thank you, Eleanor.
It is really a pleasure to have you, Stephen. You know, we live in this uncertain times. What made you think about getting a position abroad? Do you know Chinese, by the way?
Yidan, which means a little.
A little?
Yeah.
When you got the position, did you know that word?
I knew hello and goodbye, and that's about it.
What is hello in Chinese?
Ni hao.
Ni hao? And goodbye?
Zai jian.
I don't think I'll remember it, but thank you for sharing it. So what led you to choose Macau, China, as a place for you to teach? And weren't you teaching here first?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, I was always interested in international teaching. I love going to other countries and maybe learning a little bit about their culture and the style of their education. But you can't get that type of cultural meld and maybe a vacation of, say, a week or two. So I chose to do a whole couple of years in another country. And so I chose Macau, China, particularly because I'm a Baha'i, and they have a really interesting style of, they have a Baha'i international school that I was interested to see what kind of educational style that they might have. But I was also interested in understanding why Chinese or just in Asia, and Asians in general, outperform Americans.
That was an interesting concept. What did you find?
I wanted to know what their study habits are, what they're learning in school, what their curriculum is like, so I can maybe even take it back to the United States to help me teach better, or just to get a new set of a new understanding of what education is like.
Now, did you find you were received well in Macau?
Oh, yeah. I was very received well. In Chinese in general, they want to have their children learn English. They want. So because of that, they don't just want a person that just learned English to teach English. They want a American. They want a English speaker. They want a person that looks American to teach. And that might be like kind of a prejudice like concept and this and that. But it's true that that's what they want.
Now, how did you go about getting this position? Because you were employed here in the States teaching prior to going to Macau. Mm-hmm. Where were you teaching, Stephen?
I was teaching in Phillipsburg, New Jersey.
And what grades were you teaching?
I was teaching kindergarten.
And how did you find, how did the idea come to you that you wanted to go from New Jersey to Macau? Were you ready for tenure? Was tenure a possibility for you?
Tenure probably wasn't a possibility for me. I tend to jump around to different positions quite often, and even different school districts. Before New Jersey, I was at Central Bucks School District working on another grade and in special education. So I don't think tenure was a possibility for me. I'm always a kind of an adventuring type, so I just wanted to go somewhere else.
But tenure is not only difficult for you, it's mm-hmm. difficult for all teachers right now.
Yes.
What makes that so?
Well, there's like different labeling they do for new teachers now. They might say full-time substitute. I came in with a full-time substitute at times, and they might have full-time substitute for 1 or 2 years all the way through. So it's technically you never become a teacher.
Full-time. So how did you find out about Macau in particular?
I found out through Macau, through international kind of website boards that talk about what positions are open for teachers.
Oh, so there is an availability of a website.
Mm-hmm. There's a few websites.
Could you give one that you are aware of? Maybe the one that you found the position on?
Not offhand.
Not offhand.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you just even type in Google international teaching, you will find a plethora of different websites that might be interested.
So how did you get interviewed? Where did you go for the interview?
Interview through phone.
On the phone?
Yeah, three times.
And they liked what they heard.
Mm-hmm.
And you began teaching there since when?
Since... 2 years ago.
2 years. So you've been teaching there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what have you found to be the most exciting thing for you?
Oh, just you have to let go of any concepts beforehand about what you think education is like in another country. And
give me an example of what you mean.
Well, I was thinking also, I was hired as a kindergarten teacher in the beginning as well. And coming from the States, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be kind of, you know, we're going to have playtime, we're going to have a lot of this, we're going to, and it's not even close to what I thought it was. It was a 3 o'clock in the afternoon, very rigorous, very subject-filled day in kindergarten.
So they start at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they end at 3 o'clock in the
yes.
morning, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
And when they come to kindergarten, what prior experience do these Chinese children have with education?
They were in school 2 years beforehand.
So they're in school from the age of 3,
mm-hmm.
Beginning at also 7 o'clock?
Yeah, from 7 to 3 as well. So they had full kindergarten days from when they were 3 years old. And they started to... hold pencil grips at that point at 3 years old and begin to learn the letters and the numbers at that point.
So they learn letters, numbers. Mm-hmm. Do they also learn English at that time?
Yes. Yeah, so the school that I work at, there is about 5 hours of the day is all taught in English.
Mm.
And then 2 hours of the day are taught in Chinese.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Eleanor Barbro. And tonight, we're talking with Stephen Lawrence, who has a master's degree in teaching from the University of Southern California, and his teacher certification in the state of New Jersey, where he taught for 5 years at different grade levels. And he has worked now in Macau, China, at an international school for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very, very excited to hear more about your experiences teaching abroad. What struck you when they gave you a kindergarten class? What was your first thought?
Well, I mean, other than teaching 1 year in Phillipsburg, I never taught kindergarten before. I was always a fourth grade, fifth grade teacher.
And were you concerned?
Oh, I was concerned. I was like, oh, no, not kindergarten. I mean, they're going to be playing and crying and having accidents and here and there. I was like, this is going to be awful.
And what did you discover?
Oh, not at all, at all. Of course, you know, accidents are bound to happen anyway at those age. But the good thing is they're very potty trained. They're not even that's an issue. I didn't expect to see how rigorous the curriculum was there. I mean, in the beginning of the day, we have a strong half-hour character development, then gym time, then 2 hours of English time, and then an hour of math time, and a half hour of science every day.
And you're responsible for that entire curriculum?
That's correct.
And how many children are there in the class?
23.
And who do you have to assist you?
Me, myself, and I.
So that's all on you?
Yes.
From 7 to 3?
Yes.
Were you surprised?
I was a bit surprised at that, but that they haven't. That's actually even a cultural thing to in Chinese schools to have just that one teacher with all the students. Now, what you might be thinking is, oh, how can you handle such a load? But these students are very independent. They already been in school for 2 years, but prior, they can they have a very strong sense of confidence, and they can achieve a lot on their own.
So you don't have disciplinary problems of children acting out and things of that sort?
I think kids will be kids. There's going to be disciplinary problems. You need to address it right away.
I mean, but you think of kindergarten as being a place where children don't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm getting is 23 children from 7 to 3. Are they sitting still all day, Stephen?
Of course, I won't make them sit still. That's just unfair for a little kid to do. But, I mean, technically they can, yes. You know, it's almost like they're at the right level to sort of endure some, even in a mean way to say, suffering, because they really can take it in many ways.
Well, we're going to talk a little more about and get some more examples of what you're talking about. But do they all speak English by the time they come to you?
Yes. It'd be 2 years of English speaking, so they should be speaking English. Some come in with no, come right into the school at that time, but you'd be surprised on how fast they pick up English.
And do you pick up Chinese as fast?
No. I don't have their small little minds that can do that.
Sounds like they have great big minds, Stephen. So it sounds like they come in already well-versed in English, mm-hmm. and your job is to continue their masters of education in mm-hmm. kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm getting. Now, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life, we're going to talk about examples that and ways that you teach these children so that they can learn and be able to sit there from 7 to 3
mm-hmm.
when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking with Stephen Lawrence, who has a master's degree in teaching from the University of Southern California and his teacher's certification from the state of New Jersey, where he taught for 5 years at different grade levels. But right now, Stephen has spent the past 2 years teaching in Macau, China. And I was wondering, Stephen, how do you teach kindergartners these concepts? And they're sitting there from 7 in the morning to 3. I don't see that happening. Explain how that happens, Stephen.
Well, they often say that kindergartners have an attention span of about 5 minutes. So you really got to keep everything very quick, and very action-filled. So in the beginning, we do character development. And so for an example of character development, mid-year, we do a lessons on humility. And humility is a very abstract concept for children to understand. And they can understand not sharing and other concepts, but humility would be something like not bragging about your accomplishments and or explaining how smart you were compared to everyone else. So I would have read a story about humility, a story that's based on humility, and then I would call up students to come up in the beginning of the room to do a little bit of a role play.
Now, do they sit at desks while you're reading?
Oh, no. This is all on the carpet.
Oh, so they sit like in a circle on the carpet.
Yes.
Okay. So they're sitting on a carpet on a circle while you read a story mm-hmm. about humility. Now what happens?
And then so as they're still on the carpet, we will have some children come up in the middle of the carpet and do some role play and acting for them. And I will choose two students, for example, Izzy and Gabriel. I'll say, Izzy and Gabriel, come on up here. And they come up there, and I whisper to them in their ear about what they're planning to do. I say, Gabriel, you are going to pretend like you got a really great grade on a paper, and then you're going to say, I am so smart. I am so smart. And Izzy, I want you to be kind of upset that someone got a better grade than you, and you feel sad. I want you to show that. Is that okay? And they usually give me a nod saying, that's okay. And they do it. And I'll say, okay, begin. They need a little help. I say, oh, this is what you're going to be doing. But overall, they try to show how, you know, Gabriel will be taunting around with a piece of paper in his hand. I am so smart. I am so smart. And Izzy does a great job of pretending that she's very upset at the whole problem. And I say, very good, guys. Everyone give them a round of applause and they come sit down. And I say, you see how Izzy got upset? When Gabriel was talking about how smart he was, and then we would have a conversation about humility. What should we not do when we get a good grade? Should we talk about how smart we are? No, you should keep that within yourself because you could hurt what? Other people when you do it. And so throughout the day, I will watch. I will observe all the students making sure that they can, you know, they're following the new goal of not bragging and not explaining how smart they are or better they are at some things. And then I will look throughout the class, and if I catch a good example of someone saying a compliment to someone else, that's a great example of humility. And I would go on like a chart or something and give the whole class a big reward for one person showing a compliment.
That is wonderful. Now, what you have, what visual aid you have to show the class that they are improving or they're doing well? Do you use any visual aids?
Oh yes, I have a few visual aids. But one visual aid for the humility, for example, is actually I have like the stuffed animal on the board, and there's a big line of the stuffed animal on a Velcro. And as the students show humility for this example, I will bring that dog up in the air until it hits a certain goal, and then everyone gets, a party or whatever I choose to be, even just candy or whatever it is.
Well, it sounds like you really thoroughly enjoy this experience, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that the children enjoy it too. Now, you do all your teaching in English.
Yes.
And the children are all versed in English.
Yes.
Now, how about living in China, living in Macau? Does everybody, do all Chinese people speak English well? What about shopping?
Mm.
How do you manage?
Yeah, so my wife and I, we were like in the exploration mode in the beginning. You go into your apartment, you're just looking around saying, what can we eat? What can we do? It's just another foreign country. You're kind of scared at first. So, of course, you just choose those basic American restaurants right there and then. There's always a McDonald's. There's always a Subway. So just go to them at first.
Now, are there menus in Chinese?
At restaurants, yes. There are menus in Chinese. Same with McDonald's. There are menus in Chinese. But we could say Big Mac, and they'll be like, oh, okay.
So they get you.
Yes.
Well, that is really very because that is important. Now, how about your wife? How is she doing?
She's doing well. It's always a cultural mishmash when you get there. You have to just be very open-minded. You know, this is you're a guest in their country, not the other way around. So you can't assume that you have the rights and this and that. You have to really just be polite, show politeness, and so
show humility.
Show humility, exactly.
Yes.
That politeness is your number one best defense in another country. So. She's doing well. She does well there. There's a lot of opportunity, even for she's not a teacher herself, but she tutors and finds jobs here and there and everything. There's a lot of opportunity for a lot of things in these countries because they're developing. They're developing at a very fast rate, and there's a lot of need for ideas and a lot of need for good workers.
So teachers who may be finding it difficult to find positions here because of various reasons, cuts going on, budget cuts, etc. Is it something that you would recommend that they look into?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's absolutely a thing that they should look into. Like I said, there's a lot of websites that help them out with finding job and employments. You can even, if you hear about from your friends here and there that went overseas, they have, though each school generally has their own website posting opportunities.
Now, earlier in the program, you mentioned that you chose this particular school because of an interest in yours in Baha'i. So if a person has a particular interest in a particular subject or a particular country, what do you recommend they do?
What's interesting is, like, say if you're a Christian, right, and you want to go to learn about a Christian-based school, there's a lot of them throughout China, Hong Kong, Macau, South Korea, you name it, wherever country you want. And so this kind of allows people to understand more about the country they're going to. Maybe even they want to understand a new curriculum, a new ideas. And so there are websites. I'm sure there's even a Christian search engine for those who are interested in Christian schools.
Now, what happens when you for the transportation? Do they pay your transportation over once they've accepted you?
Yes. Usually there's a lot of amenities involved in getting a job like this. There's usually a house. I mean, they usually give you an apartment, like some either just some money towards an apartment or actually an apartment. They give you travel expenses, maybe even a vacation expenses when you want to go back to the States or anything, just like in my case. There's a lot of, and then at the same time, there isn't, in some of these countries, there isn't any tax. So all the money you come get in is totally yours.
Well, you're interesting. You may raise an interesting question when you say tax. Does that mean, well, you may not be taxed in the country that you're working in. Mm-hmm. What about what you owe to the United States as a result of working abroad?
Well, I don't know. If you happen to be a teacher that makes over $90,000 in 1 year, then you owe tax. But actually, if you happen to make less than $90,000, you don't owe any tax.
Well, that's interesting. Do you know any teachers that make over $90,000 teaching abroad?
Internationally, there's a possibility to make that.
There is. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like something that some people might want to consider.
People
are not aware of that, that the opportunities exist in this way. Are there any caution about applying for positions over abroad that you might think of?
Well, I think schools will market their efficiency or explain how safe the area is, but you really need to know the country you're going to. You know, maybe even taking a country that you've been to there before. I've been to Taiwan before, so I was very similar. I very well aware of, like, Chinese society, so I was not afraid to go to Macau.
Do you sign a contract that you will be there for a certain amount of time, and are you liable for that contract once you've signed it?
I would say no, because there is no way of finding you if you happen to move out of the way, you know, if you happen to move out of an area or anything. So there's a lot of, I mean, teachers that have unfavorable situations, they have did an overnight they have left basically overnight.
So that when people have found teachers who have found it difficult to remain, they just leave without notice. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
And
they do that because of safety.
They could do that out of safety. But these are very rare situations. Usually schools will try to take care of you as best they can because they want you there. People want to learn English around the whole world. They want you there. This is very, very a small percentage that say that they feel unsafe about certain things.
Well, I'm glad we covered that, but I want to thank you so much, Stephen Lawrence, for sharing your experience teaching in Macau.
Yeah.
The children are very lucky to have you, and I'm sure that they're looking forward to your return. And I want to thank you for sharing your experiences in teaching there. You've inspired us to think about creative ways to take charge of our lives by thinking outside of the box and thinking about using our teaching skills in other countries. Thank you for helping us to think of new ways for putting our education to work and to be able to become financially responsible for ourselves, even when it's difficult to get a job right here, and giving us new ways of thinking about the teaching profession. Most of us graduate and we think of an area right near us, a neighborhood, or if we're thinking very creatively, we might think of going west. But other than that, we feel we're looking for something in the area. But thank you for inspiring us and helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding we have choices, choices that we may never have thought about teaching abroad as well as teaching here in this country. Thank you for your inspiring experience, Stephen Lawrence. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.